As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year. Hello and welcome to The Games, a bite-sized audio slice of Olympic fact, opinion and analysis from The Times. I'm Chris Skinner, and today we'll be discussing the Olympics and international relations with Times diplomatic editor Roger Boys. I'll also be previewing today's weightlifting and gymnastics with Alison Rudd, and I'll be asking Craig Lord if Team GB are going to win any medals this evening. Before that, you've been getting in touch by tweeting with the hashtag MyOlympics. Messages include from Tracy Harris, why are the Australian volleyball chicks hugging after every point? Well, I just think that's what people do in volleyball. And Stan Ambition has tweeted, eating a box of Ferrero only two left. Come on. Well, I hope you made it, Stan. That's true Olympic spirit. So let's start with Craig Lord in the Aquatic Centre. Craig, having seen her do so well in the 400 metres, do we think Rebecca Adlington is a real serious prospect now for the 800?
Yes, absolutely. And this is why. In that race, there were some of the contenders, were a couple of the contenders for the 800 freestyle as well. There's more to come. There are others in there. But her last 100 was the quickest in the field. When others were starting to fade at the end and really feel it, she was starting to pick up. She was keeping going at that same pace. And if she can keep that kind of pace up, you know, for the 800, and there's no reason to think she can't do it, she'll be in world record type form. And if she's on that kind of time, there's possibly no one in the world who can live with that.
I was impressed with Liam Tancock yesterday. Obviously, he goes this evening. I think he qualified in third in the 100-metre backstroke. Do you think there's a medal there for GB?
Yes, I think so. I mean, in years building up to this, he's always just missed out. He's been very close, like 0.2 away from two very major podiums at Beijing, Shanghai World Championships last year. What we saw today was a very different Liam, and the way he swam it was very confident. He absolutely refused to let Camille Lacour, the French guy, go. He's the world champion, and he stuck with him and came back as hard as he went out, meaning he usually fades in the last 15. There was no sense of him fading in yesterday's semi-final, and that augurs very well for today.
Yeah, I thought he looked incredibly strong. What other races tonight are you most excited about?
Well, I'm in terms of Britain, Gemma Spofforth made it through to the final. This is someone who's had a real up and down life of late, you know, with her mother's death and all sorts of turmoil in her life. She's had a very difficult and also very happy last 5 years in some ways. It's been a roller coaster for her. Just to be in there to make a final for her is a real triumph. It's wonderful. I don't think the gold is there because Emily Seaburn, the Australian, is really on top form, very close to world record pace. But you never know.
Now, I've done some work with some teenagers in the last few months, and the girls in the group treat Tom Daley as if he was a pop star. They love the guy. Him and Pete Waterfield are diving tomorrow. What can we expect from those?
I think we can expect good things. I mean, they are, you know, there's a lot of controversy over Tom not pulling his weight and being more on the appearance tour than in the pool. That was, you know, overdone, overstated. He's a hardworking boy. He's worked from a very young age for many years. He's dedicated his time. Pete Waterfield, even more dedication over the years, you know, in terms of the length he's been. You don't forget that Pete has already been up there on the Olympic podium 2004 with Leon Taylor. He knows the ropes. They're serious people. They're world-class acts. And I'm sure they'll do themselves and Britain proud.
How far can they go?
All the way to the top, I believe.
I'm joined now by Alison Rudd, Times sports writer. Alison, you'll be at the gymnastics later on today. It's the men's team final. What are the chances of the side?
They're really quite good, which probably sounds odd because I think coming into the qualification, most people who followed British male gymnastics would have said, you know, Lewis Smith, great bloke, probably do something on the pommel, but as a team we're weak. But they really did rise. I know it's become a cliche, but they really did rise to the occasion. And it's actually, that isn't a stupid thing to point out, because gymnastics are scored on a subjective basis. And I interviewed Lewis Smith not just before the Olympics, but in the build-up to them. And he was quite open. He said, look, I stand a really good chance of bettering my bronze in the pommel, because the judges they hear the local crowd,
yeah,
and it influences them. They're not trying to be influenced. It's just being there yesterday for the women's qualification. I, you know, firsthand got a feel for, you know, the crowd are very polite to every athlete. They're urged to make noises for every athlete. But as soon as a member of Team GB gets on a piece of apparatus, as a sort of almost level of hysteria, and this is just in the qualification.
Yeah, well, I saw the reaction for Beth Tweddle. It was absolutely incredible, wasn't it?
Exactly. I mean, the first shrieks that I've heard at the game so far came when Beth Tweddle got onto the bar. So it does have an impact. And the key point, I think, is that China were surprised everyone by not performing as well,
yeah,
as they were supposed to. And I asked Tim Jones yesterday what was going on with China, because I think China probably are the team that stand in the way between a medal and no medal. I said, was it a fluke? What does he think? And he said he's seen them in training. He's seen the Chinese several occasions in the build-up, and they just don't look as tight or as fit or as together as he would have expected them to be.
Now, before I let you go, I want to move on to the weightlifting as well. Zoe Smith has a decent chance, we think, in the she's in the 58 kilogram category in the weightlifting, isn't she?
She is. I mean, Zoe Smith doesn't have a good chance. I mean, there are two categories of weightlifting, A class and B class. And she's been put in the B class because she's just hasn't got the ability of an A class Olympic athlete. The reason we should talk about her, though, and the reason we should watch what she does, is that she's only 18. Weightlifters peak late 20s, early 30s. She's got changes in her body to come and in her technique to come. She's already sorted out her attitude 2 years ago at the Commonwealth Games. She cried on stage.
Yeah.
She just fell apart. And she won't win, but I don't think that means she isn't worth watching. I think she could do better than we expect. And I think a British woman just progressing in weightlifting is worth taking some attention.
I'm joined now by Roger Boys, diplomatic editor here at The Times. Roger, the Olympic truce was practiced in ancient Greece, and I think it's been officially part of IOC policy since Barcelona 92. Something like this is just talk, though, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, below the surface, I mean, you've got over 80 heads of states and governments in London at the moment. And of course, quite a lot of them are at odds with each other. So and we've got a war going on in the Middle East, quite a significant insurgency there. And, you know, frankly, peace is the last thing on the minds of a lot of these people.
And Mitt Romney, who is relatively new to the international forum, learnt a thing or two about choosing some select words in diplomatic situations last week, didn't he?
Yes, Mitt Romney's big test, you know, European, you know, his international cosmopolitan sophistication and so on. And he's trod right in it straight away and managed to offend the whole of Britain by saying that they weren't ready for the Olympics. And he got a sharp telling off from the British Prime Minister, who should really be his ally, I suppose, politically speaking. The great advantage of all that, apart from, you know, earning a few votes perhaps for Obama, is that it brought Britain which has been complaining quite solidly for 10 days or 2 weeks ahead of the Olympics, behind the whole Games. And we all got angry at the Americans for, or in particular, Mr. Romney for dissing them.
Now, there are, as you said, there are so many heads of state in London at the moment. They're not all meeting and discussing the gymnastics or the 100 metres either. There's going to be some quite high-level conversations going on behind the scenes in London.
Yes, the British Foreign Secretary, William Hague, he's been seeing, I suppose, four or five foreign ministers a day throughout this whole thing. And there's been loads of little closeted meetings going on between different people in dispute. Some of it, of course, has spilled over into the athletics or into the sports themselves. But yes, it's an interesting moment when you've got so many decision makers here. In particular, as I say, with the Syrian insurgency flaring up, you know, the city of Aleppo under siege. There's an awful lot of people involved in this now, not just the United Nations Security Council people, but almost the whole of the international community is nervous about what's going on. And of course, they've got lots to talk about.
Later, Team GB play Argentina at the hockey. Their former captain, Fernando Zilberberg, got into some trouble for the video that was posted of him training on the Falklands, saying, you know, to train for London, you train on Argentine soil, I think was roughly the line that was used. Would that have been some kind of diplomatic nightmare for the Argentinians, or would they have seen something like that as a weapon to come to the Games with?
Well, the Falklands and the Malvinas hasn't gone away. If there's one country in the world where we're very, very close to well, not war exactly, but almost there, it's Argentina. We're in a really dim diplomatic relationship with Argentina. And of course, this whole incident on the steps of the Falklands, or Malvinas, as they say, monument, was really, really explosive as far as the British was concerned. But the guy who did it is now no longer on the team. And it may be, this may be perhaps the first big test of the Olympic spirit, this hockey game.
This is the first Games where Qatar and Saudi are bringing female athletes to the Games. This is the first Olympics where women's boxing is at the Games. In fact, women now have more events than men, I believe, although less competitors. Was this London? Was this the International Olympic Committee who could have put pressure on those countries to, I guess, to take a step towards improving women's rights in their nation?
Yes, I think some pressure was put on the Saudis as far as the women's delegation was concerned. But don't forget, there is an evolving process in all of these countries. There's been a dispute for ages in Saudi Arabia about whether women can drive cars. And there is actually a kind of a movement in Saudi Arabia of women who are, you know, demanding the right to drive cars by themselves, unsupervised by men. And that's happened quite independent of the Olympics or of the IOC. So there is a dynamic, and what's happened is the IOC to some extent, but London as the host, has spotted this trend and put quite gentle pressure, I must say, on these countries to broaden its representation. I must say, it looks like it's going to work quite well. That's to say, women might be the real winners of this Olympics.
Hopefully when we speak tomorrow, there'll be more medals from Team GB. Get in touch by tweeting us using the hashtag MyOlympics. A few more messages before we go. My Brand Event says, Beck Adlington made us proud. Bronze medal, great race. And it really was a terrific performance yesterday. And Ursula says, Weymouth, you've provided some great weather for this shift. Same again tomorrow, please. Although we would like a bit of wind, please. Please send your Olympic thoughts over and we'll include as many as we can in tomorrow's programme. Finally, if you listen to this on the Times iPad app, you can also get the audio as an MP3 via iTunes. If you listen to this via iTunes, why not try out our iPod app? We run some lovely pictures to accompany all this audio you can hear right now. If you aren't yet a Times subscriber, go to timespacks.co.uk. There are various offers to suit your reading habits. Our next show will be with you from tomorrow morning. The Times iPad edition will be updating at 5 a.m, 5 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. throughout the Games. Enjoy another great day of sport. Goodbye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.